Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Well, it's time to talk some football as we do every day with the Professor John Clayton joining us. John, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
We're good. Not as good as the Seahawks, who didn't have to lift a finger but became the best team in the NFC over the weekend by virtue of the Packers getting trounced, the Rams in a surprising loss to the 49ers, and now they are the sole undefeated team in the NFC. Couldn't have gone better for them, right?
No, it went perfect. I mean, it went well last week in, you know, getting the victory over Minnesota and then having things go right. Like, for example, having San Francisco lose to Miami, their third straight home loss, taking them down to three losses. That helped. It certainly helped yesterday that, you know, Green Bay ended up losing. You got San Francisco coming up and beating the Rams. So now the Seahawks get a game and a half lead. You know, they've got an edge right now in the NFC. Number one seed because Green Bay's got one loss, and you got Tampa Bay with two losses and two losses for the New Orleans Saints. So, no, it really went well.
John, what surprised you most from that 49ers-Rams game, that the 49ers looked so good or the Rams didn't?
Well, I kind of surprised. And again, that's why I keep going back and forth in the Rams. I've had the toughest time trying to figure out because I thought, you know, with all the losses they've had on defense, that 11 defensive starters and a nickel a cornerback in a matter of 2 years, you're thinking there's no way. And again, you can't name other than three players who start, Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers and Jalen Ramsey. You can't name any of the other eight guys. And so, you know, Taylor Rappin, he's not even starting. I mean, he's a Washington guy, but you can't name those guys. And so you think, okay, here they are, like ranked eighth on defense. They're looking better there. But now, how much of that was playing four games against the NFC East and going 4-0? And then, of course, now we see the defense exposed a little bit more. You know, they came back and had an incredible comeback and almost won in Buffalo, but they gave up 28 points to fall behind 28-3. That's not good. And then, of course, you know, they gave up the 24 points to a battered, bruised, beaten up San Francisco 49er team. So, you know, it brings them down a little bit to normal, but it still looks to me like the Rams are the main adversary for the division right now for the Seahawks.
What do you think of the game plan for the 49ers? It looked like they managed Garoppolo really, really well, and I don't know if that was because of his ankle and they didn't want him testing it much, but they charted how many of those passes were actually behind the line of scrimmage. Right. And they went for it was all yards after the catch, and his receivers did a great job. But I thought Shanahan deserves credit for either managing a quarterback he doesn't trust to throw the ball down the field that much, or a quarterback he just was worried about that ankle being problematic.
Well, I think he learned something from last week when he shouldn't have played Garoppolo, because you can see how bad it was. You know, he goes 7-for-17 for 77 yards, and because of the high ankle sprain, he couldn't put any pressure on the right leg and dig, you know, on his plant foot into the ground and throw the ball. So that played against him. So that didn't go well. And then, you know, I think what he learned is like, okay, let's change things around. And that's why he's such a good coach. He and Sean McVay are like that. And so now you change the game plan. You go ahead and you take the idea. It's like, all right, fine. We got to get back to our running game and get the 30 carries that we need there. That's the model that he likes to use. And we'll work short as opposed to long. And of course, it did help that he's got Deebo Samuel back, because, you know, Deebo is one of the keys right now, because, you know, he's so fast and he's so good with yards after the catch and also with the jet sweeps that he could take advantage of that. And so I think it was a smart game plan. And also it has to be smart, because if you're going to be throwing the ball on 5- and 7-step drops, you may not have a chance against Aaron Donald, particularly with an offensive line that for 2-3 weeks has been really struggling.
So do you buy any of the reports that they had an interest in Matt Ryan or any of the, it seems like we keep hearing, whether it's weekly or every season anyway, since they've gotten Garoppolo, that they're not that pleased with him, and there's always somebody in the wings that they're looking for to replace him.
Yeah, media mistakes, I think, more than anything else, because, again, it's like all the people that thought, oh, boy, the Seahawks should go for Cam Newton. They should go for Jameis Winston and all those different things. They're like, no, this is Russell Wilson's team, and this is still the team for the 49ers for Jimmy Garoppolo. And so it's like, I never bought that idea. I mean, you know, in the back of his mind that Kyle Shanahan really likes Kirk Cousins, maybe not as much now as bad of a season he's having with the 10 interceptions, but you know he likes Kirk Cousins because of their time together in Washington. But no, I never bought the total idea that just because they benched him because he was struggling with that high ankle sprain, that all of a sudden they want him out of there. I mean, you think about the idea. When Jimmy Garoppolo plays, they have a better chance of winning, right? Because again, you know, he misses 2 years ago, misses the most of the season. They win two games. He comes back, and all of a sudden, they're in the Super Bowl. Not that he's a great quarterback. You know, he has a slight edge, in my opinion, over Jared Goff. Although Goff has the edge this year, but you know, Garoppolo, though probably what 80% ends up beating Goff. That's good for him.
John, I think everybody was settling in around 1 o'clock yesterday expecting a good game between Green Bay and Tampa Bay. And I have to admit to you, Professor, that the 43-year-old quarterback looked like Aaron Rodgers and not Tom Brady yesterday.
Yeah, he did. I mean, did not look good. Certainly, Aaron. And again, what you wonder about is now he gets Devontae Adams back, so you think he's going to be able to do things, and he jumps off to the 10-0 lead. But, you know, I think you see that they had a problem with the blitzes, and the blitzes force more pressure, and the pressures force more mistakes. And so after dropping up 10-0, then they fall behind and give up 38 unanswered points, and that's not good. So they basically came down to earth, and I thought it was a kind of curious comment that Aaron made after the game where he said, well, this is good for us because this will, you know, get us waiting, get our attention spans better. And it's like, what are you talking about? I mean, you were 4-0, you didn't have an interception, you had 13 touchdown passes, and you're averaging 38 points a game. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of complacency. I mean, you just got outplayed against a defense that you didn't match up well against. And I think it shows, I mean, hey, blitzes do affect Aaron Rodgers like they affect everybody else. And Aaron may be Superman, but, you know, his cape came down a little bit.
Hey, every week we talk about how dismal the Jets are and how bad things are there, and they get trounced by the Dolphins 24-0, and you got the back and forth between Adam Gase and his defensive coordinator. How long can that whole thing exist out there? I mean, it feels like each week it's just a little bit worse when it's already hot garbage.
Well, I mean, I think it's a lot worse each week. I mean, because now you throw into the fact that here's Le'Veon Bell. He gets upset after being on injured reserve for 3 weeks and getting upset when they didn't put him on the field enough, so they cut him. And you know, the great stat on that is that on the 53-man roster, they only have one player who's been to the Pro Bowl, and that's 37-year-old Frank Gore. That's not good. And then Gore was yelling and shouting at his teammates because he was so upset with the way that they were performing. Problems there. Problems in the locker room. You take your first-round pick, Mika Becton, who is playing pretty well. You put him as an emergency tackle, and then you have to put him in the game, and now he gets hurt more, and so he's out. You put Sam Darnold back in the game after having his shoulder slammed into the ground, and now he's going to be out several weeks. So that's not good. So you throw all that together. Oh, and by the way, the defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, takes a shot at Adam indirectly by saying, well, we may be giving up 32 points a game, but it's not all on the defense. There's other reasons that people recognize, pointing to Adam as the head coach. And so now you have a feud between the coordinator and the head coach. I mean, it's a disaster. I mean, unless they just basically think Adam is the key right now to getting him the number one pick in Trevor Lawrence, that's the only reason maybe they're keeping him as a job.
He's the key to going winless. He's the key to our absolute disastrous season. We got to keep him in place.
Yeah, got to keep him in place because, I mean, if we're going to tank for Trevor, he's the best guy driving the tanker truck.
Well, on the other side of the ball, John, Miami looks pretty good. They're 3-3 now, and we saw Tua Tagovailoa for the first time. Completed his first two passes, and it was pretty cool seeing that photo of him just taking it all in after the game, sitting out on the field. But Ryan Fitzpatrick's been playing well, so yes. I don't think we're quite there yet in Miami, are we?
No, I mean, you can't be there because, again, it's like, you know, they've got two wins against two teams. At that time, San Francisco had a 2-3 record and had so many injuries that they were vulnerable, and the Jets are terrible, so they were able to win that game. So, you know, what you have, and I just spent a lot of time researching this, is that there's about 12 really bad teams in the league, right? And, you know, you got 10 teams right now with one win or less, one less being the New York Jets at zero, and then their record is, 13-54-2 combined. 13-54-2. And if you're wondering, compared to last year, there was 8 teams at this time with one win or less. You've got 10, and there's only been 4 instances where you have one of those bad boys, you know, winning a game against a 500 team or better, only 4 times. And so what you're seeing is that it's inflating the haves and is killing the have-nots. And so that's why Seattle has such a great chance, because, you know, they've already won 5 games against teams. One of them, Miami, at 3-3, who's really more of a 2-3 team, but again. They're 3-3 and four teams that had losing records with good quarterbacks. Then you throw in the remaining time. They got Buffalo, who's a winning team, and then they've got four games against losing teams that barely are one win or less. So that works to their favor, too. So in reality, you know, it's going to pump up and probably have as many as 10 or 11 teams in with 10 wins or more, and some of those teams aren't going to make the playoffs.
So, John, what was your takeaway from that Steelers-Browns game? I walked away from it going, all right, that Steelers defense looked really good. It wasn't as if their offense – I mean, Roethlisberger was no great shakes that day, 14 of 22 for 162 yards. But Baker Mayfield was not good. Two interceptions on the day, sacked four times, and they pull him. Mm-hmm. Did you look at that as, hey, he's having a terrible day, let's get him out of there, or let's save him from a beating because he was dealing with a little bit of an injury issue coming into this game?
Save him from a beating, because I know we talked about this on Friday, and I said that there's no way he's gonna struggle to get through the game, because here he is with a rib injury, and he's going against a blitzing team that goes 57% of the time blitzes, and so it went even worse because they fell behind so early and were not competitive, and now it took them out of the run game that Kevin Stefanski likes so much and put him in a position where they had the pass, and they took him out of the game, not because of poor performance. They took him out to save him, because if not, I mean, he could have suffered that injury that would knock him out for several weeks. So I thought that was a smart thing to do, but that was so predictable because, again, Pittsburgh with their blitzes are so good at causing havoc and causing problems. And, if you can't get the ball to the wide receivers and then you're behind early and you have to throw it, you're in trouble.
Steelers, Titans, and Seahawks, all 5-0, John, the only unbeaten teams left. How do you rate those three?
Right now, I mean, I think if you're doing the ratings, I mean, you still put Seattle number one. Now I think you start to think about I still put Kansas City number two. I think then you put Pittsburgh number three, Baltimore number four. Then I think you go with Tampa Bay number five. So I think Tampa Bay comes in next.
Where do you have the Bears?
Probably 10.
10, even though they're 5-1.
5-1, but again...
No one believes in the Bears, John. I think that's going to work in their favor, because I'm going to be motivated if I'm a Chicago Bears player, because nobody thinks I'm any good.
Is that human nature, Jim?
It's human nature, John. Trust me on this one.
By the way, human nature... Was I right about Jacksonville, by the way? Never mind.
Uh-oh. Yes, Professor, you were.
Uh-oh.
You were. Their defense is terrible, John.
Yeah, I know.
Well, was it the defense's problem?
Is that what happened? They can't stop anybody. I mean, they got nothing left on defense. But no, I think what you're looking at with the Bears, and again, I know sometimes the point differential gets a little skewed, but they're now what, plus 12 in the point differential, even though they're 5-1. Now, that's not good. And then Matt Nagy now for the second straight week basically said our offense is not very good, and they've got a really good defense. We know that the defense keeps them in games, but I think what you're looking at is they're kind of like a Buffalo team from last year or maybe the last 2 years, where you had and of course that's changed. I mean, we'll see how it's doing today, but Josh Allen was only getting 19.2 points a game in his starts until this year, and they're not getting the points on offense. They got 23 yesterday, but so much of their success is on the defensive side of the ball, because the defense can maybe keep teams under 20 points, but in a year like this where the quarterbacks can do so well, that may not be sustainable. We'll see if it is, but they're 5-1, but to me they still look like a 9-win team.
All right, John, there were two things I didn't like about the Houston-Tennessee game. Would you like to hear what those are?
Sure.
Okay, and I think you might agree with one of them and disagree with the other one. Number one, Romeo Crennel, isn't he the interim coach there at Houston?
The interim coach. Yes, he is.
Okay, so they take a 36-29 lead with a minute 53 to go, and he chose to go for two there and just basically win the game if they make the two-point conversion and go ahead by nine. But they missed the two-point conversion, and so they allowed Tennessee to come down, get a touchdown, kick the extra point, and go into overtime and win the game. And then the other thing I had a problem with, John, and I know the seam head football guys, the analytic guys, mm-hmm. will say, well, no, it was a good call to try and go ahead by nine there, but I would argue otherwise with my math skills telling me that why not take an eight-point lead, and then you're assuring, I don't know, we'll get to that in a second. Then I didn't like the coin flip, John. Once again, there's another game where the defense doesn't stop the other team, and they didn't get a chance to go on the field with their offense, and Tennessee wins the game.
Mm-hmm. I agree with all that, because, again, it's like You want to get the ball and get the touchdown drive. If you don't have the confidence in the touchdown drive, you know, you're going to lose 7 minutes on the clock, and you may put yourself in a position to get a tie if they do get the field goal drive, and then you have to come back and try to get a field goal drive or a touchdown to try to win it, and then it's going to be a tie. But I think what we saw it three times in the last 2 weeks, the analytical people that say, hey, go for the 2 points, and I think it was wrong. Okay, for example, you're right about the Romeo Crennel, and I agree 100%, is that you go ahead, and now you give Tennessee the chance to come back. You know, particularly, you know, here's an incredible one, is that in the 15 starts that Ryan Tannehill's had, you know, he's come back and he's thrown for almost 4,000 yards, 35 touchdown passes, and completing 69.6% of his passes. But here's the even more incredible stat, and that's why you can put both Derrick Henry leading the league in rushing, having back-to-back 200-yard games, and you can also put Tannehill in the MVP race, which right now they'd lose to Russell Wilson. But incredible stat, in his 15 starts, he's had 5 fourth quarter comebacks and a total of 7 game-winning drives. So in other words, he is able, when they're behind, to be able to come back. And that's where, you know, I don't know if Romeo was thinking about it, but it's like, if you do that to Russell Wilson like Mike Zimmer did, then you're going to come back and you're going to lose. And so I think Ron Rivera going for that 2-point conversion at the end, Riverboat Ron was wrong. It's like, did it work? And he said, Romeo said, I'd go for the 2 points again. Well, yeah, but you're wrong.
Hey, what did you brought up Cousins earlier, and I saw his comments after the game saying, hey, if I keep throwing these interceptions, I'm not going to finish the season. He had 3 picks, he had 3 mm-hmm. touchdowns, and they lose. They give the Falcons their first win of the season. How likely is it that he gets pulled based on the commitment they made to him financially? And, I mean, is his backup actually going to be better than what he's capable of being? What do you think of Cousins and what he had to say?
I think it shows a dilemma, because, you know, they're in a position having given him the $33 million extension where they almost are stuck with him unless they can trade him and give him away in a trade. And that's going to be difficult, too, because of his big number and how bad he's been playing off and on. He did okay against Seattle, but he was horrible in at least 2 or 3 games so far this year. But I think he's right. If you keep on throwing picks with Mike Zimmer, he will bench you. You will not be as good with the backup coming in, because it doesn't equal the talent that Kirk Cousins has, but it's not working. And their season is going right down the toilet, right, with the way their offense and defense is playing together. Because think about this. Here's a Falcon defense that's young at cornerback, giving up 30 points a game, and look how well they played against Kirk Cousins, and so much of that was because of Kirk Cousins.
Who is their backup? Is it
is it Trevor Siemian?
No.
Jake Browning still there?
He's Mannion, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Mannion, yeah.
Well, they got Sean Mannion there?
Yeah. Sean Mannion, yeah.
All right. Okay, Professor, either-or question here. Pittsburgh, which team is going to be hurt more? Devin Bush is out with a knee injury, the linebacker there for the Steelers, mm-hmm. or the offensive, the tackle there, Taylor Lewan, he's out with a knee injury. Are the Titans going to be hurt more or the Steelers?
I think it's going to be the Steelers, because Devin Bush is such a good player. And you can appreciate this with the Jamal Adams trade. Pittsburgh kind of did something that they have not done much, because, you know, normally they'll sit there, be a playoff team or be near the playoffs and draft 20 or so, and it's hard to get that Pro Bowl type player as good as Devin Bush. So last year they traded up and they were able to get Bush. And he lived up as a 10th pick in the draft to be a Pro Bowl caliber linebacker. Then they traded a first round pick to get Minkah Fitzpatrick. So all of a sudden, they're now a top 5 defense with those two guys. So we'll see where there's going to be a little bit of a drop off, and there probably will be, because Bush is so good blitzing, so good leading, so good as a linebacker. You lose a Pro Bowl guy like that, you pay a price.
John, I'm seeing the reports about the NFL telling the Titans that their review of how the team handled the whole coronavirus outbreak is wrapped up. It's expected they'll face a fine, but it seems like, according to Schefter and those out there, that they're not going to forfeit any draft picks or anything like that. What do you think of that punishment if it is just a fine?
Yeah, I can understand not suspending the players and all that stuff, but I think that they need more than just a fine. I think that's wrong, because, again, you know, it pushed things back and juggled things. I mean, say what you want about the situation with in New England and all that stuff, but I mean, it puts everybody in a bad spot, because you're juggling the schedule and you had to do it for 2 weeks, and so I thought that was bad, and so I think they deserve more than just a fine. So I'm disappointed in that.
Professor, we have the Cardinals against the Cowboys tonight and Arizona on the road, a slight 1-point favorite. Who do you like, John?
I don't know. I kind of almost don't want to watch it, but it's like you would think it would have to be Arizona, because who in that secondary can handle DeAndre Hopkins? I mean, nobody's been able to handle him so far, and they can't handle anybody in the secondary. So I do give the slight edge, I guess, to Arizona.
Jim's calling that his upset special. That's pretty weak, isn't it?
Well, what? Arizona's favored, right?
No, I'm taking Dallas? The Cowboys in one, John.
Okay.
Yeah, with Andy Dalton.
It's a 1 point.
That's the red rifle, by the way.
Well, what? Yeah. You call me lame for something there?
It's a one point spread? No, in fact.
Well, no, you're not, Professor.
No, I'm talking about him calling it his upset special. That's all.
Yeah, but what I'm looking at is that, and here's the weird thing, because, you know, working on that stuff with the bad football teams, I went to 538, you know, which is the analytical site that you know, does politics, but it also does football. And just like I thought, it has the Cowboys coming out with a 6-10 record and winning the division by a half game over Philadelphia, which shows me, because again, they had the Redskins at four wins, the Giants at four wins and the Redskins at five.
That's the Washington football team, John.
The Washington football team, that is correct. And so it's like, if you want to call them a football team with their record, but overall, I think what it shows you is they think that they can go 5-1 in the division, and that's about it, losing to everybody else.
Well, and they could have a home game, a home playoff game, right?
You're right. Yeah,
it's 6-10 against an 11-5 team.
That's correct.
That's
or 12-win team.
Jeez, John, we appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, there you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com.